Welcome to an all-new episode of Jet Nation Radio. Dennis Agapito and Tyson Roche give their opinions on the latest Jets news.
How about our offense? When are we going to put it together? Can we not run the ball down their throats every snap? Can we not throw it anytime we want to throw it? Can we have fun? You're damn right. I demand that we have fun.
And now here they are, your hosts, Dennis and Tyson.
Salutations and greetings to the Jet Nation faithful. Welcome to another episode of Jet Nation Radio. And as always, I'm joined by Tyson Roush. So Tyson, my man, how you doing tonight?
Dennis, man, I'm doing great. Training camp has started. I'm all fired up. And we actually have, like, news on the field to talk about instead of all the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, you know, we're not doing reviews or previews. We're finally talking about things that actually occurred out there on the field. And I'm really pumped. I'm really excited. There's just so much activity to talk about. But obviously, I guess we got to begin where everybody expects us to begin, where we should begin. And that would be with the quarterback competition. So, Tyson, I guess you've been following what's been going on. Why don't we get your take on what's been happening with the two quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, do you even want to go before that? Do you want to start with the whole media-created controversy of who's going to name the starting quarterback? Is it going to be Rex, or is it going to play a prominent role? I mean, that would seem to be like the story that captured headlines the first, I guess, 3 days of camp.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because if you remember watching Hard Knocks or any of the Hard Knocks that you watch, but obviously we watched the one with the Jets probably more intently than we did with, the other ones. But they're always switching their board around. They've always got that board out of who's where, who's number one, and they're all kind of sitting together, the general manager, the coaches, the coaching staff. They constantly have meetings. So I guess the ultimate point here is, what if it's close? You know, what if it's close and who's going to make the ultimate decision? And they kind of want to know that. And I don't know if right now that's a concern, because maybe one of these guys separate themselves where it's obvious that everybody's on board. What do you think?
I think the same thing, actually. You know, I think what Idzik was probably trying to say is he's going to be the facilitator of the discussion of who's going to be the quarterback. So when Rex is saying, I'm going to make the choice, and Idzik's probably saying, listen, it's a team decision. It's going to be me. I'm going to help. I'm going to talk to David Lee. I'm going to talk to Morningweg. I think to make it more like a team, like a cumulative effort and not just one guy, it was almost like he was trying to save Rex from himself at that point. You know what I mean? Like, take some of the pressure off Rex. Take some of the, like, the not the mojo with him, but just take, you know what I mean? Just, like, save Rex from yourself and listen. It's going to be a group decision. It's going to be an educated decision. And if it's a close decision, Dennis, I wonder how much, say, Woody Johnson has. And I know, like, that's a kind of like a negative comment, but let's be honest. At some point, it comes down to ticket sales. It comes down to the headlines. It comes down to all these different things. And starting Mark Sanchez is going to create a little bit of a negative cloud because the fans don't want to see him play. I mean, don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, Woody could definitely override. Look, Woody could override everybody. So, you know, that's kind of – we're going to need a few weeks and see what happens, and then we're going to get a clearer picture as to whether or not someone has separated or not. But here's a question I have for you, Tyson, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And I just want to get your honest assessment of this. Do you honestly think that Mark Sanchez is going to be on the Jets next year?
No, he will not be a Jet next year.
You see, I think I agree with that, and I think most of Jet Nation feels the same way. That Mark Sanchez will not – he's not in the future plans of the Jets. I mean, if Mark Sanchez – like, people say he's going to start, be on a short leash, and I don't know what that means. I mean, he throws one interception, he's gone. But if Mark Sanchez starts the season, and let's say he plays really well. I mean, this is not impossible. Let's say he's thriving under this system. Let's say he's playing really well, and you can't pull him out. You know, then – and he plays the whole season and plays really well and shows progress, and the Jets exceed expectations. Doesn't he have to stay with the team next year?
He does. But, I mean, would Rex Ryan – here's a better question for you, Dennis. And we have a lot of questions right now. Would Rex Ryan serve the same role Tom Coughlin served when he had Kurt Warner and Eli, where Kurt Warner was doing enough? The Giants, I believe, were 5-4. I forget the exact record when they took him out and put Eli in. But the Giants were still in the hunt. They were playing well, and they went to Eli Manning. I mean, would Rex Ryan have the courage or the ability to even do that? I mean, do you think he has the ability to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Again, if is he not in the long-term plan? I mean, if Mark Sanchez plays the whole year out and plays well, I mean, and then they release him. I mean, we didn't even see Geno Smith. So there's so many questions here, which is what I'm saying. Is Mark Sanchez in a no-win situation here? Is he just in a no-win situation? And does it almost make sense? I mean, I called this quarterback competition in my article that I wrote about Geno Smith starting week one a farce. And here's why I called it a farce. Because I don't believe that Mark Sanchez is in the long-term plans of the Jets. Can you see Mark Sanchez starting under center in 2015 for the Jets? Excuse me, 2014? Excuse me, 2014?
No, I definitely don't think Mark Sanchez will be starting for a variety of reasons next year. I mean, just the salary issues and just the aura around him and everything like that. I think they're looking for they want to go in a new direction. But Dennis, if he's playing really well, I mean, is it about winning now? Does it come down to winning or does it come down to next year? I mean, do you want to win now if he's playing well? Do you want to try and make that playoff run this year? Or do you say, you know what, this is not about 1 year. We're not going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to go, you know, and look towards next year. It's kind of like it's a fine line, man. It's a really tough call to make. I mean, if he adapts to morning league and he's embraced the West Coast offense and cuts down all his turnovers and play on a high level, maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe his learning curve is longer than other quarterbacks and he can be the next guy. There's so many ifs and could-has with him, and it's a tough call, but, I mean, what are you thinking? If your honest assessment is he's not going to be here next year, then you start him until Geno Smith is comfortable to play and he shows he's efficient enough to play in the system, then you bench him. I mean, don't you think?
Well, I agree with that, or I agree with just starting Geno right away. Again, I think this is the question here that ultimately decides whether Mark Sanchez starts and has a short leash or doesn't start at all. If the coaches and I guess John Idzik and everybody who is ultimately making this group decision, this collaborative decision, as Idzik likes to say, is it what you see is what you get with Mark Sanchez? Is it you're going to get from Mark Sanchez what you've gotten from the last 2 years? Because if that is the answer to the question, you know, you're going to get the same thing, then I think I see no reason why you don't start Geno Smith week one. I see no reason why. But if they see progress from Mark Sanchez and they think that he can progress in this offense, then maybe it is smarter to give Geno some more time. Because right now my assessment of the quarterbacks is Geno brings more dynamic plays, these down-the-field plays, these intermediate plays, but doesn't have as good a grasp on the offense as Mark Sanchez, who's been in a similar system with Schottenheimer for 3 years. So, but I do think that Geno can grow in that role. But right now, I mean, there's no clear-cut front-runner. I mean, I know Sanchez threw an interception the other day, but there's no clear-cut front-runner, but it is definitely close.
Well, see, the thing is, too, is I guess this is the argument a lot of the Sanchez haters make is, has Mark Sanchez reached his ceiling already? Have we seen the best Mark Sanchez we've seen? And my answer to that is no, because I think that he's an assistant better suited for him, and I think he's getting much better coaching than he's gotten in the past. So I think if there is a season they can take the next step, it could be this year. I mean, that's a huge could, but I mean, there is that chance that could happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and again, that was kind of the question that I asked. Is Mark Sanchez at his ceiling and Geno Smith at his floor? And right now they're kind of battling it out. And again, you kind of see this, we'll call it, for lack of a better term, dynamic plays from Geno. Like I saw in mini camp, I saw some throws that I said, Mark Sanchez can't make that throw. And then I saw some throws from Geno, maybe some shorter ones, the footwork kind of thing on the center. Not terrible, but a little raw. I saw some rawness in Geno Smith. And I saw some more polish in Mark Sanchez in some of these, you know, quicker, shorter routes, kind of things that he was more comfortable with, you know, the being on the center kind of thing. Again, it's going to be interesting to see the ultimate decision-making apparatus in action here. But, of course, we do have a few more weeks of training camp to sort of look at and evaluate preseason. We're going to get a chance to see. So I guess the bottom line here is if a clear-cut front-runner doesn't emerge, you know, we're going to have to trust in Idzik, Rex, and Morningwig to make a decision based upon what? Based upon winning a game or winning more games down the stretch, which is very important for Rex to win down the stretch because he's had a poor November/December the last 2 years kind of. And you know what? They started off like a house of fire against Buffalo. So Mark Sanchez against Buffalo. People forgot about that game real quick when December rolled around and Mark Sanchez looked horrible and the team went in the tank. Same thing with 2 years ago when they were 8-5 and they lost 3 in a row. So I think it's important for Rex to have a good end of the season. And people will forget about the first game no matter who's under center.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, right now Jet fans are excited. I mean, training camp started. We have action on the field. I mean, in day one, you know, Geno throws a 50-yard pass to Stephen Hill. Everybody's like, you know, how did Jets West work out now? And all everybody's so excited. And the minute Sanchez does something wrong, that's why he shouldn't be the starter. But one thing we got to keep in mind is, you know, we have to wait till games start happening and more like physical practices start and scrimmages. And I mean, I understand that they're in drills now, but there's a long way to go to see what these guys can do, because once the lights go on, a lot of things change. The speed of the game changes, you know, the contact, the physicality, a lot of things change. So, like you said, there's a long way to go in the decision-making process for who the quarterback's going to be.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But, Tyson, we do have a caller on the line, and it's our friend Courtney Arillo from JetNation.com, who handles our tailgate videos, and she's yet to have me on one. I can't say that I blame her, because I have a face for radio, as I've described many a time. So, Courtney, welcome to Jet Nation Radio. What say you tonight, Courtney?
Hi, guys. How you doing? Just two things. I mean, I don't even want to talk about the quarterback competition. It's more Rex, because, you know, everyone's talking about his demeanor. Of course, how he's, like, more, like, pushing, favoring the defense or whatever. And then his how him and John and Zick are, you know, making the decisions and whatnot. And just his whole, like, the way he acts, like, at press conferences, everyone's like, oh, he's different now, he's different. And, I mean, do you think what he's really doing is probably just setting him up for next year's interview?
So you think that Rex, Courtney, ultimately your question is Rex just setting himself up to get himself a job, whether it's a coordinator job next year?
Basically.
Because he's basically in a no-win situation, Rex. Tyson, what do you say to that? That Rex is in a no-win situation. He's getting fired almost no matter what.
No, see, I like the way Rex is handling things. He's embracing it. He's embracing the challenge, the us-against-the-world mentality, which I think is what he should do. He's got a little bravado in his defense. And he's got a little fire in him, which I like. I mean, I think he's embracing this role. I don't think he's looking towards next year. I think he wants to shock the world and prove himself. And a motivated Rex is a great thing, I think, in my eyes. But it's going to come down to the offense. I mean, his defense could be the best in the NFL, but if your offense is scoring 9 points a game, you're going to get fired. That's just the way it is, you know. But in terms of how he's handling himself, I think he's taking the absolute right approach. He's toned it down a bit, but he's still kind of firm, and he's still got a little fire in him. I mean, Dennis, what do you think?
No, I like to bring it back a notch. I think that's John Idzik's style. He wants to bring it down a notch. Look, I mean, Rex came in with the bravado, and he kind of backed it up. They made the playoffs. They didn't make the Super Bowl, but they made the playoffs the first 2 years. But when you talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And the last 2 years, they haven't. So the circus tents have come down. There's no that guy whose name I won't mention with the team anymore. And Rex has taken a more cautious approach as he moves forward. So, look, the offense does need to be serviceable this year, but I don't think that Rex's job is unsavable. I don't think that Rex's job is unsavable. I think that the team needs to show progress. The team needs to be competitive. And there's an understanding that John Idzik has set this team up for the long run, especially going into next year. And, look, the quarterback is ultimately the most important position on the field. There's a big question mark there. There is this competition, I'll call it for lack of a better term, although I don't believe it's a competition, going on right now. And we'll see, though. I want to ask you this, Courtney. I know you like Mark Sanchez. Mm-hmm. You're a big fan. I think that Mark Sanchez is playing better, say, in camp than he did last year. He seems to be more focused. I think this is still close. A lot of people on Twitter are very excited about Geno Smith. I understand that. But I think that this is still close. I think that Mark Sanchez is at least elevating his game somewhat in practice and doing a decent job. What do you think about that?
To go back real quick, I mean, the whole Rex thing, I think it's very salvageable. And I just wanted your opinion on basically, because I've been hearing all these rumors. Anyway, back to the Mark thing. I mean, yeah, he's doing really, really good as far as I've seen. And I read today that Geno Smith, you know, really couldn't keep up. He's not as far as physical condition goes, but people have to remember
Courtney, come on. Don't believe that.
Well, I was going to say is some people read into that and think that this is, that camp is for conditioning, and meanwhile, he's supposed to go in it already, like, already
In a foot race, who's going to win a foot race? Geno Smith or Mark Sanchez? Come on, is that Brian Boldinger who wrote that or said that?
Yep.
Tyson.
No,
I was watching
what?
Heath Evans.
I don't know. I know it wasn't him, but I don't
listen,
know who wrote it.
Listen, Courtney, hold on a second. I was watching Heath Evans on NFL Network, a known Jet hater, okay? And I mean, I wanted to be sick. You know, some of these guys have a partisan point of views, and I don't even know where that came from. And I heard that, I wanted to laugh. I mean, Geno Smith works out like, he does like 100 push-ups in the morning. Are you kidding me? Because he didn't go all out in one gasser in training camp? Yeah, that means to come October or November, he's not going to be able to play. I mean, I thought that whole
thing. Oh, no, I never said that. No,
no, I'm not saying you.
That.
I'm just saying the reports, that, again, the media kind of wants to portray this. There's some sort of controversy. They like controversy because that's what sells. But you know
yeah.
what? There isn't really. There's a legitimate, just like in Buffalo is a quarterback competition, just like in Jacksonville, you know, there's a competition going on here. And we'll see who emerges. And I'm sure in Buffalo and in Jacksonville, David Caldwell is a GM in Jacksonville. And whoever, I don't even know, I know it was Buddy Nix, but he stepped down. But in Buffalo, and Doug Marrone, the offensive coordinator, and all these things, they're all involved. They're all involved in the decision-making process, just like with the Jets. So, I mean, look, if they can make something out of nothing, they will. And I think that this is going to be close down to the end. And I think if Geno Smith, though, progresses in the offense, I think he has a real opportunity to take his starting job away from Mark. I know you're a big Mark fan. But, Courtney, listen, we're going to let you run now. Go ahead, one more thing.
I was just going to say, what if Mark – what if Mark's, you know – goes back
if Mark is better, then I think, and Ron Pickett will give him credit because he wrote this. You know, Jet Nation, let's wake up and let's just support whoever's behind center, because ultimately, John Idzik, from what I know of him, and Tyson, maybe you want to chime in on this. John Idzik makes pragmatic decisions. I had two people tell me the same word to describe John Idzik: pragmatic. Joel Curry and Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune. John Idzik does not care what the media thinks, the fans think. He only cares what he thinks is best for the team. And I think that if he believes that Mark Sanchez is best for the team moving forward, Mark Sanchez will be in there. But Tyson, right? Idzik drafted Geno. He didn't draft Mark. So, you know, maybe that's a strike against Mark right there. But Tyson, go ahead.
No, I think you're right. I mean, if it's close, Geno's going to play. I mean, that's just a fact the way it is, because at this point, Sanchez should be better than him. He's an experienced quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he should be the proven guy that should be able to take command of this offense and dictate plays and make plays. And if Geno can hang with him without being his first NFL training camp, I mean, you got to go with a younger guy. So especially that Idzik drafted him. He's got a high ceiling. He's got a lot of potential. He's made some plays in training camp now that opened some eyes with his deep passing and his running style. So, I mean, if it's close, I think Geno's playing.
Only time will tell.
All right,
really
Courtney, listen.
I can't even decide.
All right, Courtney, listen, we really appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye, Courtney. Hey, Tyson, listen, I got another question for you. I just want to, you know, I hear this a lot about don't start Geno right away or he's not ready. I mean, obviously, only the coaches know whether he's ready or not. But I mean, do you think that Mark Sanchez – I think this in 2009, I think maybe most Jet fans feel this way. In 2009, Mark Sanchez was kind of anointed. They had a quote-unquote quarterback competition that was definitely a farce. I mean, Kellen Clemens didn't have a prayer to win that quarterback competition.
No, he didn't. I mean, he definitely didn't. I actually was a Kellen Clemens fan, to be honest with you, but I'll never tell anybody that.
I had a Kellen Clemens jersey, I told you. I had a Kellen Clemens. I want to get out the phone number. If anyone wants to call in, talk about any issue regarding the team, any issue going on in training camp, we're kind of focusing on the quarterbacks. That's obviously a hot topic. But it's 646-716-4697. Hit one when prompted. Please, Tyson, I would love to hear from Jet Nation on what's going on. But, you know, a lot of people are saying about, you know, Geno, maybe a little raw. I mean, there's some things that he's not doing perfect just yet. And he's had some praise. He's had some things that he's got to work on. But here's the thing with me. You remember a guy named Brownie Nagel? I'm sure you remember him. Maybe some of the younger fans don't. And go ahead, Tyson. I'm sure you remember him. Maybe you want to discuss him first, and then because here's Brownie Nagel, all right? Here's Brownie Nagel in a nutshell. Here's where I'm going with this. Brownie Nagel was drafted by the Jets in 1991, and he came in and he started. And his first game, he threw for 366 yards. He had 106 quarterback rating. It was against Atlanta. I remember this game. And you thought that. You thought that, wow, man, we got something here. He set the world on fire. Then he proceeded for the rest of his year to have a 49% completion percentage, 7 touchdowns and 17 interceptions in 13 games. So, you know what? I would be more nervous about Geno Smith right now
if he was doing everything perfect, everything was wonderful. I actually am kind of happy to hear that maybe he made a mistake here or a mistake there and needs to grow and is working on things and has upside. That I think that, again, the Brownie Nagel syndrome, we'll call it. So maybe you want to discuss your experience, because I'm sure you remember it.
The Brownie Nagel experience. I remember that. I remember that game clearly. I remember once he came out, he threw the hardest screen pass in the NFL. He was throwing rockets all over the field. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about Geno Smith. I guess the biggest feedback so far is that he's been holding on to the ball too long. That's he's trying to get through his reads, hold on to the ball too long, and he's taking, he's taking sacks. So that's the biggest concern is him taking sacks early on. But I agree. It's, you know, these are growing pains. It's a learning curve. But the most impressive thing with Geno Smith, and it came actually from Antonio Cromartie, he's impressing the veterans with his work ethic and how quickly he's improving from under center. He's making plays. You know, it's like it's actually exciting to hear the veterans become excited about him, which is something I didn't expect so early because, let's be honest, this was a Sanchez locker room. A lot of these guys were tied to Sanchez. They were very vocal about it. And now they're kind of saying, hey, you know what? They're going to give Geno some credit, which is kind of encouraging for me. I mean, I'm sure you noticed that as well.
Yeah, and here's the thing again that and this is why I've kind of been on the Geno bandwagon from minicamp, was this one throw I told you he threw to Mike Sims-Walker that it was incomplete, actually, but the way he had to kind of throw it awkwardly, and, you know, John Gruden does this great job with his QB camp on ESPN. It's just wonderful to watch, and he talks about, you know, you don't always get to set your feet and throw. You have to throw in awkward positions at times, and Geno threw this pass down the field. He flicked it about 30 yards from, you know, rolling out a little bit away from pressure and flicked it. And I'm like, Mark Sanchez can't make that throw. Now, maybe Mark Sanchez is more advanced in the offense, but Mark Sanchez can't do that. And that's one thing that maybe, again, when I spoke to Jordan White, he talked about Morning Wigs offense, the long game, the intermediate game, and the short game. I think right now maybe Geno Smith is impressing more in the long game and the intermediate game, while Sanchez is impressing more in the short game. Can Geno Smith elevate his game up to sort of where Sanchez is in the short game to put himself at that level? And I guess you know, that's where we're going to see. If he progresses there, then it's really going to become more difficult to keep him off the field.
You know, I agree with that. I mean, that's the whole thing. If he can develop into an all-around quarterback that can make throws all over the field, it's hard to keep him off the field. I mean, I still think that Sanchez can make those plays down the field. I'm just curious to see. I mean, the one day they did struggle in camp, he was the second string. He wasn't with the first string. So you got to kind of be careful how everybody evaluates the quarterbacks. Like, Geno was on fire today. He was going with the ones. Sanchez struggled. He was going with the twos. I mean, there's a lot of circumstances that go into this. So, like, I'm really curious to see how the scrimmage plays out, how the other things play out, because it's a lot of different variables when you start evaluating them.
Yeah. Look, I'm not like I said. I think it's very close. I think it's fair to call it close. I think the penultimate sort of question is Mark Sanchez going to progress, and or is Geno going to progress and sort of pass him? And I guess that's really the question that the coaches are asking themselves as well. We do have a caller on the line. It's our friend Jude from North Carolina. So, Jude, welcome to Jet Nation Radio. What do you got
How
for us tonight,
doing?
Buddy? We're doing fantastic.
Well,
we're happy to hear from you. And I want everybody to know that Jude is like the Tasmanian devil on Twitter. And that's meant as a compliment. That's meant as a compliment, Jude, because you come in like a house of fire. I mean, there's no beating around the bush with Jude. Jude will tell it to you straight. So what do you got for us tonight, Jude?
Okay, well, I have two things. One, I'll start with Joe McKnight first. I remember like a couple of weeks ago I said Joe McKnight's definitely going to be on the team. I like to resign my prediction and say he's going to be off the team. It's embarrassing that he comes in and he has low body fat percentage. He's getting winded throughout the whole thing. And if Goodson wasn't his Disneyland or something, McKnight would probably be cut during camp because it's just embarrassing. Every time he gets the opportunity to be a good running back, he just throws up or something. And another thing also, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, with Mark Sanchez, I have a bold prediction. I think he's going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar. And the reason why I say that is because Blaine Gabbert recently got hurt a couple of like, I want to say yesterday or something. And if he doesn't get better, they only have Chad Henne. And Mark Sanchez is better than Chad Henne. So I think we might have a trade going on. And that's a bold prediction, but I think that could happen. What do y'all think?
Go ahead, Jude,
I love
you,
man. I love you. You're very passionate. I'll say this. I'll start with the Sanchez thing. I think David Caldwell would get fired if he traded for Mark Sanchez and made him better. To be honest with you, I think Gabbert sprained his ankle. I think if you push comes to shove, I'd play Chad Henne over Mark Sanchez just because of the cost factor and looking towards the future. I wouldn't bring in Sanchez with his contract, and just it would just they're going in a whole completely different direction in my eyes. So I don't think he's going to be a Jaguar. Dennis, what do you think?
No, I don't see that either. But let's talk a little bit about the running backs. We didn't want to get into this, and while we have Jude on the phone about the running back situation here. You know, Mike Goodson didn't report to camp, and the Jets have been very mum on this, and I'm very confused. At first I thought maybe it had something to do with his legal issues, maybe it had something to just kind of work it out, but it's been a long time. Now, he's on what's called the did not report list, and if he doesn't show up, basically, I mean, Joe McKnight's making this team. I don't care whether he got sick. Look, Jude, I hear what you're saying. You don't like the fact he didn't pass the conditioning test right away. He's been a little bit, you know, kind of sick or whatever. But he finished the last practice. I think ultimately he'll be fine. I don't really see a problem with Joe McKnight. I think down the stretch, when you get into the season, you'll forget about all this stuff. But if Mike Goodson does not come back to the Jets, then Joe McKnight is on the team, and you're going to have. And Chris Ivory is now a little nicked up. He's got the hamstring going on. They brought in this guy Khan, I guess his name is Tyson. Maybe you know him better. Is it Chris Khan? Yeah, I have to look him up. I forgot his name already. I've just been so busy with other stuff. But they got Ivory, who's a little nicked up, Goodson, who's not there, Joe McKnight, Bilal Powell, and this other guy they picked up who's never really played in the NFL. So, I mean, I don't see Joe McKnight going anywhere right now, even if Goodson comes back, but certainly not at this particular moment. Tyson, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, Jude, I understand your frustration, too, with this conditioning, because it kind of pissed me off as well. I mean, he's got an opportunity to do some things in Morning Wade's offense, and it's just – it's frustrating to see the way he's coming about it, especially with Goodson not in camp. But with that being said, I mean, he has the ability to do a variety of things in this offense, and not to mention he's a kick returner, but, I mean, you can line him up in the slot. You can do direct snaps. I mean, you can run, like, a wildcat formation. You can do so many things with him, catch the ball out of the backfield. So I think right now, especially with Goodson not in the fold, I didn't make Knight's fix. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think you've got to give him some time to let him get in shape, and I think he'll be fine.
I think the guy's name is Chad Spahn. I'm sorry, we got his name wrong. But, yeah, apparently he's out of Northern Illinois. I don't think he's ever played a snap in the NFL. I was with a couple teams during preseason. So I think the situation with the running backs right now is Joe McKnight, you can take your prediction back, Jude, because Joe McKnight's probably going to make the team no matter what. And I still believe in Joe McKnight. Just what Tyson said, he had this thing in 2010 a little bit worse than it is now. I think ultimately he'll be fine. I don't think he came in out of shape. Maybe he was just a little sick or whatever, and we'll cut him some slack.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, I'm just saying personally. What do you say about that? Do you want to change your prediction back, or do you still think that?
it depends on the whole Goodson thing. I'll change because I mean. I hope he does better in this next couple of days of camp, but if he doesn't, I mean, weren't they saying that Zach Rogers could be a pretty good, like, kick returner? I don't know. And, I mean, if all Joe McKnight really does, like, kick returning or whatnot, maybe they replace him. I mean, I don't know, really. So, for now, I'll keep my prediction.
All right, you're going to keep your prediction that Joe McKnight does not make the team and that Mark Sanchez gets traded to Jacksonville. Jude, this is going on record, okay? So we have this on tape. It's not going anywhere. You're stuck with these predictions, Jude. Jude, listen, we appreciate you giving us a call tonight, as always. And keep it up on Twitter because, you know, we all love to read your tweets.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay, good night now, Jude. Bye. Thanks for calling. All right, well, that's our buddy Jude from North Carolina. Check him out on Twitter. I think it's Jude Truth. Is that what it is? But, you know, you're going to find him anyway. If you're a Jet fan on Twitter, you'll find Jude eventually through a retweet because, he loves to talk Jets football on Twitter and he likes to call into the show, and we appreciate him calling in. But we kind of went over the running backs a little bit there, Tyson. So maybe we just want to go over a little bit about the wide receivers now. Now, the Jets brought back, again, somebody that obviously we've been talking about, Jet Nation have been talking about, and it finally happened. Braylon Edwards, he is on a little bit of a pitch count. And, again, I think Jet fans are happy to have him back, as we are. It's a little bit of competition at the wide receiver position, a veteran guy. But taper your enthusiasm a little bit because you're not getting the Braylon Edwards of 2010.
Look at you coming with the negativity already, Dennis. Come on, man.
Well, I'm not being negative. I'm being realistic.
Listen, No, I agree with you. You're not getting the same Braylon Edwards, but I like the fact that he's on the team. They need a veteran presence. I mean, he seems to take a liking to Stephen Hill. He's serving as a very good mentor, which is important. I think it's a smart move, especially, Dennis. I mean, do you want to talk about Santonio Holmes? I mean, the more reports you read, this guy could be out longer than just week one. This could be like a substantial amount of time he's going to be out for the Jets.
Well, I think there's a very good chance he goes on to reserve PUP, which means he'll be out for 6 weeks. And then after the 6 weeks, they would have some time to evaluate whether they could bring him back or not. Look, that could happen, and it is what it is as far as if he can't play and they come into the cut-down portion where they have to make a decision about him, then they're going to put him on reserve PUP. Then we know he's going to be out for 6 weeks. And it's good to hear, though, that Stephen Hill is having a pretty decent camp. Like I had said when I saw him out in California, he looked a little more relaxed. Maybe in mini camp that knee was bothering him and had been swelling up on him. And maybe he's just a little more – he got a little time away from the facility, got to focus on football, not worry about coaches yelling at him. And he seems to be having a good camp. I also hear good things about Clyde Gates, who told me he was going to have a big year, and maybe that was true. But I want to talk – Ben Obomano is another guy who I think could definitely make the roster and contribute. He's a veteran guy, been in the league for a while. And he did have – let me go over statistics real quick. He had 37 catches in 2011. He was on IR last year for the most of the year. 37 catches for 436 yards. 2010, he had 30 catches for 494 yards. So he's 7 years in the league out of Auburn. So I think – and Isaac knows him. I think he could definitely contribute and just be a guy who's there for depth. But the guy I want to talk about really, and this is really bothering me, he didn't practice in minicamp. He needs to get himself out on the field. And I mentioned this. The organization said, we got to see this guy out on the field. We got to see this guy play. And he's not playing. And guess who that is? And I'm sure you know.
Jordan White.
Bingo. I mean, what do you think about this? Does this guy want to make a team? I mean, he's going to get released because he can't go on the practice squad again. He's going to get released. Because these other guys, why would you – I pulled my – I mean, look, I understand injuries are injuries. But, I mean, you got to – at some point, you got to – it's put up or shut up, you know?
Yeah, especially when Rex Ryan starts expressing frustration too. That's never a good sign. I mean, I completely agree with you. I was encouraged by hearing that Clyde Gates has completely improved his route running, his consistency. That was music to my ears. I mean, you hear about Stephen Hill, you're contributing, you know, consistent hands, more explosive out of his routes, which is – it's encouraging. But, I mean, what do you do with Jordan White at this point? Jordan White, it's a tough call. These guys are hungry. They want to play. And then you have all these undrafted free agents trying to make the team, Zach Rogers and Ryan Spadola and all these guys. So he's really got to get on the field. If he doesn't get on the field, he's got no value to the team at this point. I mean, it's hard to evaluate a player when he's sitting on a sideline. It's hard to evaluate a player when he's sitting on a sideline.
All right, well, I agree with you, and you know what? I mean, he hasn't shown anything. He's got one catch for his NFL career. I don't care about his numbers at Western Michigan anymore. What good do they do you when you're riding a bike? But we do have a caller on the line. His name is Kevin, and he's from Brooklyn, and he wants to discuss a little bit about the potential friction between Coach Ryan and John Idzik, given the fact that, you know, Rex was kind of forced upon John Idzik and isn't his guy. So, Kevin, welcome to Jet Nation Radio. What do you got for us tonight, buddy?
Hey, yeah, that's kind of the question. I've just got a strange feeling when I read yesterday about Isaac coming out and saying, hey, listen, Rex is not picking the quarterback. We're picking the quarterback. I'm picking the quarterback. And I just wonder if that's the beginning of the end of this whole Rex Ryan situation.
I mean, I don't think it's the beginning of the end. I mean, I think it's just, my honest opinion is that he's trying to save Rex from himself. He's trying to say this can be a group decision, not just one guy. We're all going to talk about it. It's kind of just – I think it's just trying to defuse the situation a little bit and kind of keeping things out of the headlines. You know, I wouldn't look too much into that. I would look more down the line, like, as the season progresses, any more telling, you know, telltale signs. But, I mean, Dennis, I don't know. Did you think – I don't read too much into this at this point. Do you?
Well, the whole thing is, I mean, you got Woody, who's probably one of the richest human beings in the entire world. Nickel and diamond Rex, probably Isaac came in and said, listen, I want to get rid of Rex. He says, no, you can't. You're going to work with him this year. Next year he'll have 1 year left on his deal. We can talk about, getting rid of him if we don't win this year. And I just thought, you know, if you're bringing a new GM in and a new system, new everything, you got to cut Rex. You can't be doing this. This is silly, I think. Because, I mean, Rex is just, I'm sorry, he's a buffoon. I mean, just shut up. Did you ever hear a Belichick press conference? Coach, how do you think we played today? Well, we won. We were all right. But you won 62-0. Well, they gave us a tough first quarter. It was and Rex is up there screaming and yelling and ranting. We're wonderful. This is the greatest defense in the history of the NFL. Come on. You know, enough. Shut up.
Well, I don't think that he's been that way last year. I think he was a lot of disappointment, if you notice a lot of his press conference. I think the thing that bothered me personally about Rex wasn't necessarily that he talked too much, was that he didn't have good answers. I don't know why this happened or why that happened. But I don't see Rex, you know, this year really piping off. I think he's been very much under control, calm, taking a cerebral approach. Kevin, give me a specific example of what he said this year that
balled. Well, I'm going to go back to last year a little bit.
I want to know this year. I want to know this year.
All right,
this is a new regime, and Idzik has quelled. Remember, I don't think it was Rex Ryan's decision to bring in Tim Tebow and bring ESPN to the training camp. I don't think that was Rex Ryan's decision.
We all know that. I mean, the whole thing was a bizarre thing, and they never even gave the man a chance to play. I didn't quite understand what they were doing with that.
Okay, Kevin, but I just want a specific example from you. I want a specific example from you, Kevin, because we have a new GM, John Idzik, and we had Kimberly Jones on from NFL Network last week, who said that John Idzik has clamped down on the media, clamped this sort of, you know, closed things in-house, and really clamped down on Rex. So you're talking about the dichotomy between Idzik and Rex. So I want to know what Rex Ryan has said this year. I want to know what Rex Ryan said this year that bothers
you. You're probably right, but I just go by Belichick. He gives you a one-word answer. Shut up. He's in the film room looking at film, and God knows what Rex is doing, wearing disguises, and I just had it.
All right, Kevin. It sounds like your mind is made up about Rex, and thank you very much for the phone call. Thank you very much for the phone call, Kevin. Kevin's mind is made up about Rex. He's not open-minded about him. He thinks he's a buffoon and this and that. But you know what? I wonder if Kevin felt that Rex was a buffoon when they were going to AFC Championship games. Again, when you win, you can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. Do the victors go to the spoils? But once you, if you talk the talk and you don't walk the walk, then you get egg on your face. And that's what happened with Rex. And Rex has now toned it down. I don't want Rex to turn into Bill Belichick. I'm sorry. You know what? Bill Belichick was the head coach of the Jets for 2 hours. I don't care anything about Bill Belichick, Tyson. What do you say about Bill Belichick? Because you know what? He stuck it to the Jets, and I hope he never wins another game again.
Dennis is all fired up tonight. I love this.
Well, wait a minute. What are the Patriots doing right now, Tyson? What's going on in Patriot land? What's going on in Patriot land, and what's going on in Jet land?
I don't see
the media up there going after that. You know, our buddy Mr. Tebow is up there. Why isn't ESPN up there covering camp for them, saying this is going to be the greatest thing ever? Why aren't they up there? Why aren't they calling them a circus? Alfonso Dennard is on probation and got a DUI, and we're not even going to get into that other thing that I don't even want to discuss. I don't even mention that person's name. I'm so disgusted about it. Yet they spent the fourth-round draft pick on that person. Bill Belichick? You want Bill Belichick, Mr. Cheater? You want him? Show me the proof that Rex Ryan ever cheated in a game. That's what I want to see. You want to call Rex a buffoon? Go right ahead. You know what? That buffoon got us within 5 minutes of getting to the Super Bowl. And I take Rex Ryan in a playoff game any day of the week and twice on Sunday. And since we play a lot on Sunday, I'd definitely be happy with that. Tyson, now I am fired up.
Woo, man, this is the most passion you've had in a long time.
Well, what do you
I
think of
like
Bill
this.
Belichick? I want to hear your opinion of Bill Belichick. Yeah, he's had tremendous success in New England. Maybe if Rex Ryan had Tom Brady on the center, he would have had the same success. I don't know. Because you know what's funny? For all the success Bill Belichick has had, how long has it been since he's won a Super Bowl? It's been quite a while. I'll give you a hint. It starts with 8.
Dennis, man, did he press your buttons or what? Are you okay? Do you want a glass of water or something? Can I help you out?
Well, I'm just saying, you know what? I happen to like Rex, and I like the fact when Rex came in, because remember, the Jets were the laughingstock of the league. The Jets were the redheaded stepchild. We were kicked around and stomped on. And Rex came in and said, you know what? You're not stomping on us anymore. Remember when he said, you take a swipe at one of ours, we'll take a swipe at two of yours? Now, he's had to tone it down a little bit because he hasn't had the success. But here's the thing that I like about Rex Ryan. Here's what I like about Rex Ryan and why I think he should have stayed on. Because he's proven in the playoffs. And let me give you an example of this because it's just been bothering me. Everybody says, oh, surround yourself with offensive weapons and this and that. Have you think the Atlanta Falcons have done a good job surrounding Matt Ryan with offensive weapons?
Oh, they're loaded.
They're loaded, right? They're loaded. Oh, they're loaded with Roddy White and Julio Jones and Tony Gonzalez, and they had Michael Turner, and now they have Steven Jackson, and all these weapons, right? Well, what is Matt Ryan's playoff record? Could you give it to me?
Sure,
I'll tell you what
good.
It is.
One win, I think.
It's 1-4. I remember the one game they won last year that they won by the skin of their teeth. If they had lost that game, you know, Matt Ryan with all his offensive weapons would be 0-5 in the playoffs. And guess what? They had home games they lost. That job saved Mike Smith. That game saved Mike Smith's job. If they had lost that playoff game to Seattle, which they should have, Mike Smith would have been fired after being the number one seed. So you know what? It's great if you can make it in the playoffs, but you have to do something. And Rex Ryan has, in my opinion, taken a less talented team in 2009 and 2010 and gone into the playoffs and beaten more talented teams on the road with Mark Sanchez as his quarterback. That's why I like Rex Ryan, because he can ultimately take you to the big game and win it. That's my opinion. And anyone wants to call me up, here's the phone number. I'm sorry, Tyson. Let me get the phone number. 646-716-4697. Call me up and tell me I'm wrong. Go ahead, Tyson. I'm sorry.
No, Dennis, I have some boxing gloves here. You want some boxing gloves? You want to bang a little bit, too? You want some rocking music on?
Well, you know, I don't like grandiose statements. I want specifics. Rex is a buffoon. Well, give me a specific statement to this year that he said that he's where he said he looked like a buffoon. And Bill Belichick. Well, we're not going to talk about that. Well, maybe as a fan, I want to hear some answers from my coach. No, we're not going to talk about that. Bill Belichick is the last person I want to hear that we want to model ourselves after, a guy who left us high and dry.
Well, Dennis, I think my point was Rex Ryan, when he first came here, gave us a much-needed culture change. He changed the entire viewpoint of the Jets. He changed the culture. He just gave everybody a much-needed life, just a vigor. He gave us everything. And now what he's doing, he's slowly maturing as a coach, and he's learning how to become a full head coach. I mean, he survived with his ground and pound and his defense. Now he's learning, you know what, he has to evolve. He has to become more well-rounded. The offense has to, you know, develop and progress. Special teams are important. I think he's maturing as a head coach. He's learning as a head coach. And now he's got to put it all together this season with a team that's not as talented as teams in the past. Now, the other thing I wanted to say to the caller was, while you may not like Bill Belichick, and I mean, Belichick's a great coach, but I mean, I would want him. But look at the Harbaughs. Look at the way the Harbaughs conduct themselves. Animated, fiery, start pushing guys. I mean, the Harbaughs, who are arguably got to be the top five, top six coaches in the NFL just based on their success.
Well, they're both winning the Super Bowl last year, weren't they?
Right. But look at the way they handle themselves. Animated, fiery, I mean, they punch in podiums. I mean, what does Rex Ryan do? They're very similar to the way they handle themselves. I mean, they're a little bit more. I'd say, well, they're more, you know, they're a bit more better on offense and more offensive-minded. But, I mean, they're very, very similar with the handler teams.
Well, look, I agree with you, Tyson. And I think my thing is this about – I hear about the wide receivers all the time, and I hear a lot of me, well, the Jets have no weapons and lack of – and I know that's a concern. But Larry Fitzgerald is one of the top receivers in the league, but he had no one to throw him the ball. So what good would be having – or Calvin Johnson, who's arguably the best receiver in the league. So Detroit had a great year last year, huh? So, I mean, you have to have the whole package. You have to have a serviceable offense, and you can't be 30th in offense. But you know what? What if the Jets are 15th in offense this year? You told me right now the Jets were ranked 15th in offense this year. I would say they would have a shot to make the playoffs. So we're going to see. John Idzik has done a good job of bringing in competition. Now it's up to Rex Ryan to harness the potential in these people. And this is a make-or-break year for Rex. It is a make-or-break year for Rex. I'd be kidding myself if I said it wasn't. But I think that given the fact his track record, the fact that he had a winning record as a coach, that he deserved one last shot. And you know what? John Idzik came into this situation knowing that Rex Ryan would be his coach. He knew it. And I don't know whether he sits up at night and says, I hope we win four games so that I can hire my own coach or that we make the playoffs. I think that John Idzik would like to make the playoffs, be successful, and have Rex Ryan be his coach for as long as Rex Ryan is successful. That's what I think John Idzik feels inside, and if it doesn't work out with Rex, I think he'll be fine getting his own coach, But I think he wants to be successful this year as a first-year GM, as any first-year GM would, who's already put their stamp on the team.
Yeah, I don't think any GM takes a job to lose. I don't think the competitive nature of this business, it all comes down to wins and losses. I mean, you want to win as soon as possible to appease your owner, to appease the fan base, to put a competitive product on the field. These are things you want. I mean, that's the reason why you get into this business. Who wants to lose on purpose? Who wants to just take a job and say, you know what, I'm going to lose a while, then I'm going to get better? They want to win day one. And I think Izzy's taking every measure to do that. I think he's trying to help Rex Ryan the best he can to put him in a position to win. I mean, you know, they took on some pretty dire circumstances with their salary cap and the mess they have with contracts. They did the best they can. Now it's about Rex has to take the talent they have, develop it, put together a solid game plan, and coach it up and be competitive this year. And that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, like, listen, I've been tough on Rex, and you know how I feel about him. I mean,
yep.
Defensively, I have no arguments. My concern remains the offense. But you know what? He has a quality coaching staff in place. Now it comes down to making sure they make the right decisions at quarterback. And then the other thing, too, is, and this is something we don't really get into much, it's game management, roster management, and time management. And those are things that Rex struggled in the past a little bit. He's made some questionable decisions in the past. And Mike Westhoff used to always help him with that. And Mike Westhoff's no longer there. So that's one thing that we really haven't talked about this year is the impact of Mike Westhoff being gone. And he used to help Rex with timeouts and challenging the penalties and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see the impact of, you know, how Rex can handle things without Mike Westhoff by his side.
Well, look, he's got Marty Morningwig, who was a head coach in this league and, you know, knows how to run an offense. So we're catching up with the other offenses in the league now with Marty Morningwig. I did want to get into this a little bit now that I had a chance to stick my head in the bucket of ice.
Are you breathing?
Yeah, I'm breathing. Counting down from 10. We did lose Aaron Berry to an ACL injury. And I just wanted to go over, there's an old expression in the NFL, it's called, it gets late early. I want to go over some of the injuries that has happened around the league and just guys who are out for the season or potentially out for the season. Michael Crabtree, you know, that was earlier in the year, and even during the offseason he pulled his ACL. He could be done for the season, the wide receiver for the 49ers. Dennis Pitt of the Ravens tight end. You have this question mark with Percy Harbin in his hip. Armon Binns, a wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins, out for the year. Tyrone Crawford, defensive end for the Cowboys. Jeremy Maclin. I mean, you think the Eagles were carrying on Jeremy Maclin this year? You have Jonas Mouton, the inside linebacker for the Chargers. You have Dan Copen, the center, who was replacing J.D. Walton, who was on the PUP list right now because he has an ankle issue. So he was replacing him, and then he's out. So, you know, it gets late early, and this is what I'm talking about. You know, having depth, having, you know, plans B through E in place. And we actually had a chance to talk to Mike Tannenbaum, the former general manager, during the week. It was on JetNation.com. If you want to go and listen to the whole interview, you can find it. But we do have a couple of snippets, and we may get into it. But, you know, I think that he did talk about Mike Tannenbaum, that one thing that he regretted was not having enough depth at wide receiver because he felt that his depth at cornerback was able to make up for the loss of Darrell Revis with Cromartie and Kyle Wilson and Ellis Langster. And while I think that Aaron Berry could have contributed this year and definitely could have made the team, they're still fairly deep at cornerback. I see Darren Walls is doing some good things, and you still have Langster and Trufant, and now D. Milner's been signed finally. And we discussed that a little bit last week about the contracts and that, you know, I felt that they would all get in real soon, and they did. But, you know, the Jets do have some pretty good depth at cornerback to kind of make up for that loss. But, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed that we can avoid these types of injuries, because you look at some of these people I just mentioned. I mean, some of them are big-time players that their teams are really relying on, and now they might be done for the whole year before training camp even, you know, gets underway for two or three practices.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And it'd be interesting to see if there was any kind of research done of the impact of the new CBA as compared to all the injuries that are occurring now, because some of these, there's no more sprained ankles. It seems like every injury is like a torn ACL, which is kind of crazy. But to go back to what your point, Dennis, I mean, it's a very good point. Aaron Berry was a loss. I mean, we both thought he was going to have an impact this year, but they do have some depth. You know, like you mentioned, Darren Walls, Isaiah Trufant, Ellis Lang, so they have guys there. But Dennis, the position that concerns me, and we talked about it earlier, is the running backs. I mean, Mike Goodson's unknown right now. Chris Ivey's nursing a hamstring, but, you know, all reports say he's going to be back this weekend. You know, if Goodson's MIA and he's not going to be around, and Ivory goes down, do we look at bringing in a Michael Turner? I mean, is Joe McKnight going to be your guy with Powell? I mean, the running back position was once considered a strength of this team, and now with the unknown with Goodson and the Ivory, who's got a history of injuries, I mean, are you concerned a little bit or no?
Oh, no, I mean, I'm definitely concerned because, look, I mean, we brought this up with Kimberly Jones last week that none of these guys are starters, or have been starters in the league in their history. I mean, Chris Ivory, he only played in six games last year and six games the year before that. So he has a history of injuries. Now, he's a dynamic player when he's on the field. Again, we talked about the potential. Mike Goodson, I'm not even going to speculate. Maybe he's just not coming. Maybe he never comes back. Maybe that's it. Maybe the Jets eventually end up releasing him and trying to recoup some of his signing bonus, and that's it. Maybe he's just decided not to play football. They sure have been mums on it. I mean, I think people could have accepted this and said, listen, we all know he's kind of got an issue. He's dealing with it. I think we would have kind of read between the lines and said, it's that legal issue. He's taking care of it. But you're right. I mean, they might need to sort of look at one of these depth guys, not just a Chad Kahn, who is a guy who's never really played, but an actual veteran guy, like we were talking about with the receivers. So that's a very good point. I guess we'll have to really keep a close eye on that in camp as far as if John Idzik does need to pull the trigger on a veteran guy who maybe has enough in the tank to sort of, you know, play a role here. But I did want to get into this also with you, Tyson, which is on the defensive side, which is the safety position. And we've been hearing a lot of good things about Antonio Allen, and I just wanted to get your opinion on that. And we also had a chance to ask Mike Tannenbaum a question, and he sort of gave an overview of Antonio Allen. So I wanted to play that as well. But first, I wanted to get your opinion on what you heard and what you thought about.
Yeah, Dennis, I was actually surprised about the results. Because early on, everybody had Josh Bush slated as a starter opposite DeJuan Landry. And then yesterday, Rex comes out and says, Antonio Allen right now is running with the ones, and Jaquan Jarrett's backing him up, and Josh Bush is backing up DeJuan Landry. And I was like, talk about a curveball. I mean, I didn't see any of that coming. I was like, wow, this whole, like, it was almost like a whole, you know, secondary shift there. I was like, what happened here? I was very surprised. And like you said, you know, actually Mike Tannenbaum hinted towards this, and he actually gave us a pretty good scoop on that, just based on Antonio Allen's athletic ability, where Josh Bush is more of a cerebral guy. I mean, if you want to play the clip, I think it was pretty interesting to hear what he said.
Yeah, this is just about Antonio Allen, and here it is. It's just Mike talking about Antonio Allen, and we'll get into Bush in a second.
And, you know, starting with Antonio, he has great length, and he's very productive in South Carolina. And knowing the way Rex that I do, he will move him around. He'll be active as a blitzer. He's long enough to cover tight ends, so I think Antonio's future is really bright. He's a great kid, really works at it. I like him a lot.
Well, there we go. Mike Tannenbaum, the person who drafted Antonio Allen, and he did have a sack last year, you know, came off the practice squad. But that's very encouraging to hear that, because we know we have some issues there, and if somebody's kind of stepping up and taking the leadership in this as far as, like, you know, taking the bull by the horns and grabbing this job.
Yeah, it's encouraging, and it's just, I mean, one of the bugaboos of the past with the Jets safety has always been speed and athletic ability. I mean, LeRon Landry last year was, you know, a human missile, lighting up ball carriers and stuff, but I mean, the Jets still had some issues with, you know, covering tight ends, some, you know, some blown coverages, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if Antonio Allen can make an impact, especially with blitzing and things like that, that's got to be encouraging. And it gives Rex Ryan another weapon, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah, and you did bring it up, just what Tannenbaum said. We don't have the clip. I didn't include that portion of the clip. But about Josh Bush of being more of the cerebral type, while Allen is more of the pure athlete. You know, it's kind of that interesting dichotomy between the two, because I always felt that, even though Bush was maybe more rangier, that he would kind of be the guy to start with Landry, that he would fit that role better. Like, Landry's kind of that in-the-box safety, plays the run. Bush maybe plays back a little bit, has that range. Maybe could be that one high safety. But it sounds like, from what you've discussed and what we've heard, is that kind of it's Allen, Landry, and then Jaquan Jarrett, Bush. But I guess maybe they'll mix and match a little bit depending upon circumstances. But it's nice to hear that, goes back to building the team and getting late-round draft picks will work out. If Antonio Allen works out to be a serviceable safety and can be a legitimate starter in this league, I mean, you're filling a hole, you're getting a guy who's not costing you a lot of money, and you have him under contract for another few years. You know, that's really what ultimately this team needs moving forward to really be productive as far as, you know, controlling their salary cap and things like that. You need those guys to work out for you, and this might be one of those guys who potentially does.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest gripe I had coming into the season, or coming into the offseason, was the Jets needed speed on defense. They were just slow, and in certain areas they had to upgrade speed, and they did that, at linebacker and at safety. So it's encouraging. I mean, these are all positives. I mean, especially like you mentioned, Dennis, if you can get a guy like Antonio Allen to start, he comes at a reasonable price, and he's young, he's athletic. I mean, these are all things you want as you build your roster going forward. So it's definitely a positive.
Well, I did want to get into this a little bit, too, when we did ask Mike about Quinton Coples and about his transition. And we've heard some varying opinions. You know, we had our good friend Christian Dyer from Metro New York on, and he was not impressed with Coples' footwork. Felt like he couldn't play that linebacker role, and if he had to drop back into coverage, was not really meant to do that. Now Tannenbaum, who drafted him, who saw him up close, had a kind of a different perspective. So let's play the clip here. Tyson's asking him the question.
I guess I'll start with Quinton Coples. Quinton Coples is, you know, he led the team in sacks last year with 5.5 sacks, but now Rex is talking about him dropping him into almost the outside linebacker position. How do you think that will work out for Quinton?
Yeah, I think that's just part of, look, he's going to be asked to move forward more than backwards. But, you know, Rex likes, again, having that versatility like he did for years in Baltimore with the Adelius Thomas type. It just makes it hard for the offense to slide protection, not knowing who's coming and who's dropping. But Quinton athletically can do it all. You know, for a guy that is as big as he is, he's athletically, he's off the charts, guys. And, again, we like him because of his length. It's really important to have the arm length and just to have his height really gives him a chance to be a good pass rusher for a long time and be able to disengage from tackles. So he could also cover the curl flat in a zone, and he could – really hold up in pass coverage, so I think his future is really bright.
Well, I mean, I liked that when he said that he could hold up in pass coverage, because I think that's the big question mark with Quinton Coples standing up or maybe having to go back into zone coverage.
Yeah, and that's been the issue so far. I think Rich Cimini, who I hate to value his opinion, but he did have some comments today saying that there, you know, Coples has struggled a little bit going back in the coverage from what he's seen. So that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a work in progress for him. I mean, Rex wants him to be a little more aggressive, which is interesting feedback. So we'll see if that plays out. But that he could play a big, big factor if he can, you know, just be serviceable in coverage. It could be a huge, huge difference for this defense.
Well, I thought Mike made a good statement at the beginning, which is he's got to move forward rather than kind of stay where he is or go backwards, in essence. And moving forward means doing a variety of things. He feels that the athleticism that he has can fit the ability to go into zone and make the coverages that he has to. And from what you're saying, the reports are that he's kind of fitting that role. So that's good to hear. I guess another guy we want to get into real quick, and it was the last one we have here with Tannenbaum, was you talked a little bit about the youth and the speed that had been lacking in the defense. And a guy who's going to play a big role this year filling in for Bart Scott is DeMario Davis, another guy who Tannenbaum drafted. So here was his analysis of DeMario Davis.
And how do you think DeMario Davis is asked to replace Bart Scott? And I think everybody's excited about is like his youth and his athleticism and his speed. How do you think he will assimilate to the starting defense?
You know, I think if we're talking about the Jets, you know, 18 to 24 months from now, I think DeMario will be known as one of the leaders of the team. He has natural, innate leadership. He's just, he'll speak, but he's also a lead-by-example guy, and he's about as hard worker last year as a rookie as we had. He's just a really impressive guy, guys, and I think he'll play well. Obviously, Bart was a really good signing for us, gave us all that he had. You know, we got a little nicked up coming down the stretch last year, but I think DeMario with David Harris, that's going to be a really solid pairing for the Jets at inside linebacker.
Well, I have to agree with Mike Tannenbaum right there. I think that's going to – I mean, David Harris, again, for what he's getting paid, I think he's underperforming, but I kind of like the tandem right there. I think it's better than the Bart Scott-David Harris tandem. What do you think?
No, I definitely agree. I'm an admitted Bart Scott fan. I think in some ways he's underappreciated with the Jets, but you can't deny DeMario Davis's, you know, athleticism, explosive ability, the ability to make some plays, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. He can do a variety of things for a Jet, so it's encouraging. And actually, Dennis, I think according to reports, David Harris has dropped some weight too. He's supposed to be in phenomenal shape. So, you know, a motivated David Harris is never a bad thing either.
No, look, I mean, David Harris is next year is his last year of his contract, and, you know, he's scheduled to make $5 million. So, I mean, it's a little bit of you could kind of go either way with him. I mean, $5 million isn't a ton of money if he has a good year this year and just have him play out his contract and then maybe go from there and say, you know, maybe draft his heir apparent. He's getting a little older now. Or have that option. Again, we're talking about options here going into next year. So we're going to see how David Harris plays this year. He's obviously on the team. If he has a good year, maybe the Jets do look to extend him. Maybe they say, okay, we're going to let you play out your contract, and then we're going to think about, you know, re-signing you or whatever. However it works out. But you're right. I think it would be ultimately the best thing for the Jets. Have David Harris have a good year this year, really kind of step up, earn the paycheck, and go into next year and have him on the team, a veteran guy, and maybe draft his heir apparent and have him, you know, kind of be the rotational guy. That would be great for the Jets, you know, moving forward, because $5 million is very reasonable for a linebacker who gives you the potential that David Harris does. I just don't think he's lived up to the big price tag that he's gotten over the last few years. I did want to bring this up, too, and I know you want to talk about it, which is Antonio Cromartie. I think, you know, here's a guy who a couple of years ago you might have looked at as a little bit of a knucklehead. And when the Jets got him, he came here, you know, he produced, but he really has just emerged as a leader on the team as a whole. Forget about the defense. Just a team leader, brought the guys out to California to work, you know, kind of brought Kyle Wilson under his wing. I think Kyle Wilson, while a lot of Jets fans are spoiled by the Revis Cromartie, you know, combination over the years, I think Kyle Wilson is a serviceable guy. If he was the number two cornerback and Milner had to play behind him for a while until they got up to speed, I'd be fine with it. If Milner beats him out, I'm fine with him being the number three cornerback. But I really just love what Antonio Cromartie is doing and what he brings to this team.
No, it's, you know, especially if you want people that watched the Jets Nation show on SNY last week, I mean, you had to be impressed by the leadership role that Antonio Cromartie is taking. I mean, those workouts, I mean, with all due respect to Mark Sanchez and Jets West, those workouts were insane. I mean, just hardcore, you know, conditioning workouts, agility workouts, and it's all young players. I mean, the only guy you wish you would have saw there was D. Milner, but that's a whole different story. But, yeah, he's taken on a leadership role, a vocal role, and it's like it's continuing in camp. Like, every report you got to camp is Cromartie, he's, you know, constantly coaching, he's inspiring people, he's leading, and that's what they need. I mean, you figure, Dennis, one of the things we haven't talked about is the amount of veterans they lost this year and the amount of leadership they lost this year. I mean, you may not have liked Bart Scott. He was a leader. Darrell Revis was a leader. I mean, you have Brian Thomas, DeVito, Sione Puhon. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were a veteran presence in the locker room. So there could have been a leadership void. And it seems like Antonio Cromartie is picking up the slack, and he's embracing it, and he's just doing a great job with it.
You know, I just wonder, Tyson, I mean, I haven't heard anything about Bart Scott. Is he just – I mean, I haven't heard a sniff, nothing. I mean, you would think that maybe some team that – is he just going to retire? I haven't heard one word about him.
The last thing I heard was he's still recovering from an injury. I think he had surgery. I mean, I could be completely wrong. I thought he was still recovering from an injury. He had surgery, and he's just rehabbing. But, I mean, I agree. You know, Dennis, there's a lot of veterans out there that are still sitting out there that haven't signed that are kind of surprising. I mean, you have the Kerry Rhodes. You have Michael Turner. There's all these guys that are just
– Brandon Lloyd.
They're waiting for somebody to get hurt, and then they're going to try to get that contract. But it's a weird time for the NFL veterans right now.
And you did ask Mike Tannenbaum about that, and he said that, again, if you want to go to JetNation.com, you can look under my name, but Tyson did it with me, and Mike Tannenbaum went over a lot of things that he did as GM and was very gracious to give us his time. But you asked him about that, under the new CBA, why did a lot of these veterans that seem to be good fits for teams, guys like Eric Winston just signed. You know, he was a guy who was out there for a long time. John Abraham was out there for a long time, just signed. There are guys you just mentioned who are still out there. And Mike Tannenbaum kind of said that he felt that right now teams are looking to take care of their own given their salary cap situations. And it was an interesting answer. So, again, the whole interview, I believe, is interesting. So if you get a chance and you want to listen to it, it's on JetNation.com. But I did want to get into this also and kind of wrap up on this, which is John Idzik and his kind of his first year with his draft class. I wrote an article on the 21st of July on JetNation.com about Geno Smith, Sheldon Richardson, and D. Milner, and kind of the issues that were facing them and what I thought would happen. It said basically that they were likely to sign soon. Within a week, they were all signed. And here was the big issue with Richardson and Milner was offset language, which basically gives the Jets salary cap relief if they release the player and the player signs with another team. So Idzik got this offset language in Richardson's contract, and Milner was holding out a few more days. And I just want to get your take on this, Tyson. There was no way that Milner was winning on this issue. So it made sense for him to sign because Idzik said, I can't give in to you. A guy four spots behind you has the same language. I got to give you the same language. I'm setting a precedent here. Rookies who have guaranteed salary, which is salary they're paid during the year, not signing bonus, guaranteed salary, which an offset could provide relief for a team, gets an offset. And I think Idzik was also sending a message out there, just in general. This is the way we do business. When we want something, we hold your feet to the fire and we get it. And I'm kind of glad to see that mentality from John Idzik. And I know from Joel Curry, a guy who's been on the show, a former agent, that he says John Idzik is a tough negotiator. And, you know, we talked to Mike Tannenbaum, and he kind of had a reputation for being maybe a little bit of not such a tough negotiator. So it's kind of refreshing to see that approach coming from the team.
Yeah, I think John is very well aware of, you know, the criticism he's about to receive. You know, every move he makes can get criticized. It's his first year, and everybody's trying to see what moves he's going to make. And now he's establishing precedent. This is his first draft. He picked the guys he wanted to pick, according to everything we've read. And now he's saying, these are contracts we want you to sign. If you don't want to sign, hold out. You know, and everybody – and the pressure was – it wasn't on the Jets. It was funny how in years past with the Revis holdout, it seemed like the pressure was on the Jets. He's got to get McCann. You better sign him. This year with Milner, everybody's like, Milner better case. Like, everybody had Idzik's back, which was kind of a different like, – kind of like a refreshing approach, I think. And I'm glad it's the approach he took, because it's just – it's the way you got to establish business – be a no-nonsense guy. And Dennis, you know what that's going to set? It's going to set precedent for next year, too, because they're going to have a substantial amount of cap space. So he's going to have to make other deals. And now he's setting, like, he's putting the foundation blocks in place now. I think it's great.
Yeah, you know, I really like John Idzik. I like listening to him. I like listening to him speak. And we went over this a little bit earlier. We'll kind of backtrack now, and then we'll wrap up. But I think that John Idzik is exactly what they said, pragmatic, and he just looks at things in an objective manner. And I do think that he wants to have his say, he wants to have his two cents, and he should. He's the general manager. The general manager puts the players on the field. And ultimately, what the product on the field is what you see is produced by the general manager. It's supposed to be him. It's reflective of him. And if that product is not good, it should weigh upon John Idzik. I know that you can look at the coaching and this and that. There's a lot of factors that go into it. But ultimately, the product you see on the field is put there by the organization, which is the head honcho, is the general manager. I know the owner is technically above them. But any organization you look at that has a top-notch general manager like the Ravens, I mean, Ozzie Newsome. I mean, he is obviously the best talent evaluator. And year in and year out, look at all the guys they lost. Yet I still think that they're a contender for the playoffs and to maybe go back and repeat. I mean, again, what you see on the field is indicative of the organization, and John Idzik has brought this philosophy with him, a long-term approach, a no-nonsense approach. And I really like it. I really think the future for this team is bright. This year might be a little bit of a tough year. It might be what you would call a watershed year where you got to go through the growing pains. We're going to find out. But you know what? It's a totally different mindset around here in Jetland going into this year than it was next year. And I believe going into the next season, the Jets will be a playoff contender. That's the way I feel, Tyson. And I'll let you have the last word, and we'll wrap this up.
Dennis, as passionate as you are tonight, I'm going to back up and say I agree with you, because I'm almost scared of you.
Well, you know, I'm gonna get up. I'm gonna work up a little bit of a lather. I'm gonna hit the punching bag a little bit, and you know, then I'm gonna just see if I can just watch a little television and just relax. But Tyson, once again, you know, and it was so nice to actually have a little football to talk about. Some activities that took place on the football field that we could evaluate and say, you know, this guy did this, the coach liked this, and it was much nicer. Then, not that I didn't mind having Andrew Abramson from the Palm Beach Post on about the Dolphins, or that we had Kimberly Jones last week from NFL Network. It was great. She gave a great review preview, but it was real nice to get to talk about some football. And before you know it, I mean, before we know it, we're going to have our first preseason game. I mean, it's August 9th, which is not that far away. I look at my calendar here. August 9th is a week from this Friday. A week from this Friday, we're going to see live football with the Jets. I know that this weekend is the Hall of Fame game. I guess it's the Cowboys and the Dolphins. But we're going to see live Jets football a week from Friday, and I just can't wait, Tyson. I can't wait.
Yeah, no, I'm excited too, man. I'm actually excited about the green and white scrimmage this weekend up at the Cortland. There's a lot of good things going on, and you just want to see how these guys rise to the occasion. They're all getting, you know, they're all getting acclimated to camp now. They're getting in game shape and things like that. Now you want to see what the cream rise to the top. Who wants to start? Who's going to be there? Or is Jordan White going to get on the field? Is Udo going to play better? There's so many questions that are going to be answered over the next couple weeks. It's just exciting, man.
All right, well, Jet Nation, listen, we appreciate the listens. We appreciate the downloads. If you have any questions or comments, or you think we can do the show better in some manner, please email us. It's jnradio at JetNation.com. Remember, our Twitter handle is at JetNation Radio. If you want to give us a follow, we'll keep you up to date on the show. So for Tyson Rausch, this is Dennis Agapito. Jet Nation, we'll see you next week at 8 o'clock.